Hi, and thanks for joining me for Spiritual Experiences Case 2. This is about a classroom experience rather than one with external observable effects like cases 1 and 3. But it's foundational, as it came about 10 years after case 1 and 3 years before case 3. I would be remiss if I didn't include it, although I'm aware that it's pretty abstract and radical. So here's the story. In the spring of 1966, my senior year in high school, I showed up for my usual class in the Christian Science Sunday School in Wellesley, Mass. Our teacher was Joseph G. Hurd, and our class usually had 3 to 5 or more students. I mention his full name because you can find 2 of his Christian Science lectures from the 70s on the web. On this particular Sunday, I was the only one who showed up, so it was just me and Joe. He had been a naval officer in the Pacific during World War II and a Navy chaplain in the Korean War. He had a law degree and was a member of the Florida Bar. And now he was a Christian Science practitioner and worked in the Christian Science headquarters in Boston. I'd known him for some years and we had a friendly and comfortable rapport. As we got into our class discussion, I asked him something I'd been wondering about. How puzzling it is to imagine the extent of the universe, since it's hard to imagine that it is infinite, and hard to imagine that it isn't. Joe pointed out that the real universe isn't out there, but is within the divine consciousness. It is in the mind of God, the divine mind, in whom we live and move and have our being. If we think of the universe as being spiritual, dwelling in divine consciousness, it's easy to think of it as being infinite. It can go on forever, like the range of our thinking. That made sense. I don't remember how we got to the next point, but we considered the nature of what might be substance in that spiritual universe. Joe talked about how the substance of reality isn't material stuff, but spiritual. And that spiritual stuff, at its essence, comes from the divine energy of God's love. We talked about that for a while, and I still remember the words of my realization. The energy of spiritual love is the essential substance of all existence. For some reason, I perceived and sensed the actuality of those words. It was like seeing a little cloud in my mind's eye that represented the energy of spiritual love, and perceiving it to be the actual and true substance of reality. Then we talked about how, since the true substance of the universe is spiritual, it is then certainly not material. Joe mentioned that a prominent physicist had described the building blocks of subatomic matter as nothing moving swiftly, which appealed to me since I'd been studying physics in high school. That led us to a familiar conclusion in Christian Science, that if spirit is real, then matter is unreal. I asked the obvious next question. If matter is unreal, and looking around us at the class table, where did this unreality come from? The answer he offered was simple. As I remember it, the way it hit me was that if matter is not substance, if it is unreal, and there is no matter, then it makes no sense to ask where it comes from. It doesn't come from anywhere. There isn't any. It seemed like his answer pulled the rug right out from under the question, where does this unreal picture come from? It may have lifted our discussion to a transcendent vision, an entirely spiritual level. To the logic of human sense, it seemed kind of ridiculous. On the other hand, it followed as a logical consequence of the earlier insights. This conclusion was at once completely spiritually logical, and yet, to so-called material sense, It was more than a little absurd. Yet it fit perfectly with a sense of holy spiritual logic. I loved it. Looking back, I have often attributed my comprehension of that concept not only to grasping the substantiality of the divine energy of spiritual love, but also to having an appreciation, perhaps even a bit of delight, for an idea that in a funny way made no sense at all. I liked the nonsense aspect of it, as well as the logical part. It was probably because I had so clearly seen the energy of spiritual love as the essential substance of existence, of all reality, that I had the standpoint from which to comfortably accept the idea that it is absolutely true from an entirely spiritual standpoint to say there is no matter, even though it might not look that way when viewing our world superficially. I should probably add that this doesn't deny the good we see around us. It just recognizes it as having its substance in spiritual ideas rather than in mindless stuff separate from thought. And to paraphrase a Bible verse, the things of the Spirit are foolishness to the natural man. This would certainly be a good example of that. The comprehension and acceptance of those few conclusions became a foundation for my spiritual thinking and spiritual progress. After a few decades, I came to realize that the ideas Joe explained that day, a spiritual reality dwelling entirely in divine consciousness, accessible to us through reflection, the energy of spiritual love as the essential substance of existence, and the utter invalidity of matter as a factor in truth. Those basic ideas represented essential building blocks of spiritual thinking in Christian Science. After more than a half century, I can still picture myself walking home from that Sunday school class, very aware that no matter what things ever looked like, from then on, the spiritual world was, in a deep and profound sense, the only one that really mattered. If you haven't heard Spiritual Experiences Case 3 yet, you may want to check it out. It's an example of how these basic principles can be demonstrated in practice. Thanks for listening. Until next time.